Hello, I'd like to welcome all back to Hello Earth again with Michael in Maui. And today is Tuesday after the Monday Labor Day holiday, so maybe no one knows it's Tuesday. It seems like the first of the week. But anyway, welcome, Michael.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, so recently, I have posted a couple new images on the NASA Connection HTML page on the site, and I think we'll start off maybe by talking a little bit about NASA and the images on there, and if we get a caller, we'll take the caller right away, and hopefully we can get some Urantia callers again. They're always interesting. So, Michael, this magnetic image you sent me that is new as of the 22nd of August, that is really something. And this appears to be the first time the scientists aren't really saying what it is. They're kind of baffled.
Yes, looks like they can explain the fact that there is a magnetic image. Ring of energy, but they cannot explain that one clump of energy, this energy where you just can't understand it. You know, why would it not be smoother, more consistent throughout the ring instead of having it all clumped up in one area? But what's interesting is that they've come about at least being able to present it, and this is the kind of things that are very important in coming up with, you know, Hello Earth and the bright object near Saturn, and that, first of all, it is a bright object. It is more than anomaly. First, it was an anomalous kind of thing, but then you have real activity going on, activity that is detectable by our instruments. And that is very important to move this beyond the esoteric into our, at least within the grip of our instrumentation, which brings us well within the grip of our knowledge base, at least our ability to comprehend. And I think that's one of the important factors of why I began to remember my experience there in the architectural world, New Jerusalem, and what happened there, and that it really exists. Otherwise, this story could be blown away as simply conjecture, somebody's need for attention or something like that. Wouldn't you agree, Curtis?
Yes. Well, the NASA's been taking these pictures, and we haven't really had them on the web in the 80s because there was no web in the early 80s. So the Voyager pictures aren't really on the web as much as these pictures, but having this documentation, though Cassini takes visual pictures and infrared pictures, and now the magnetic field image, and it rotates with the planet every 10 hours and 47 minutes. That's extremely fast for the size of Saturn.
Oh, well, actually, it's rotating in sync with Saturn's rotation. Saturn rotates a little bit slower than Jupiter. Jupiter is 9 hours something. But right now, that clump of energy is rotating, or actually orbiting, you might say, Saturn in sync with its rotation, which is an unusual thing right now.
Yeah, really. The story, I mentioned this to you when you were here, but the story of 2001, it was given away by the magnetic field. There was a magnetic field that their instruments detected on the moon, and that's when they dug that monolith up. And it's when the sun hit it that it shut off a burst of energy that went out to Jupiter, was in the story. But in this case, it's also a magnetic field that our our instruments are detecting, and it's rather fantastic. I mean, this is probably one of the best pictures. And then on the NASA Connection HTML page, then we have the. Well, would you like to say any more about that magnetic image before we move on to the next ones?
Well, there's a lot to say about the magnetic image. First of all, that it has to do with making a visible, at least very much like the aurora is visible on Earth, some of the light energy, you know. It has to do with the way some of the sunlights or the sun's actually not only just the light, but its actual energy that comes from the sun is collected by the planet. And if you were to surmise that an intelligent life or superhuman technology, in other words, beyond our level right now, could scoop up free energy, this would be how it would look like, someone actually being able to collect the energy and then use it. And what gets me is that we're seeing some of the scientific data, and if we look at some of the more esoteric stuff like the Urantia book, which talks about the beings, very high order of beings that are actual living beings, creatures, that serve in the capacity of energy controllers and energy regulators. And as I said in previous interviews, that I was shown one of them, which had definitely the appearance of something living. And they told me that was how their world got its energy or regulated its energy, and that has a lot to do with even how the sphere itself, the world, is able to collect its energy and then regulate it. And the energy we're looking at is magnetic or electromagnetic, and includes various forms. And I remember asking it a specific creature that I was shown in. Described in the Urantia book as a Frandalink energy regulator. It seemed to be able to do that because I asked them to rev it up, give it some order. They said, oh, increase power demand. All right. And they increased power demand, and then it started to change colors. So this seems to tie in pretty much with what they were doing, and able to collect this energy. So it's more than just generating it. Generating energy in the sense of maybe what Riley says is of a hydrogen fusion core. They're also collecting it in a very interesting way. I don't know how it's done, but I was told that these Frandalinks were existing at one time on Earth, and they used various energy corridors and these spots to collect energy also. This is an interesting bit of knowledge that I have, which seems what might be at least addressed in this picture, right, that they have there.
In this magnetic picture?
Yes. Because we have our ones for our Earth, you know, which is not quite the same. It follows more the magnetic field, but this one does not. It shows a donut-shaped field.
Mm-hmm. And there's actually like a, well, there's actually, you can see that spot, but then there's like a blue cloud.
Right, that's highly dense area, highly energetic area.
Yes. Blue cloud between like 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock.
Right.
And then
that's interesting because it gives me a hint of what they were trying to explain to me, that it's actually collecting energy. And, it looks like it's collecting it. I mean, it's putting it in a definite observable clump of energy that is orbiting the planet in sync with the planet's orbit.
It's phenomenal.
Yes, so a bit of the scientific revelation or a bit of the esoteric knowledge here, and we're getting a pretty big picture coming out of this, these things. You go further down, you see what, yeah, our telescope is showing. Actually, what Cassini is showing, yeah?
Oh, which image is that?
Well, actually, you know, any right below it, we have we can move away from this. If you want to continue on this subject about it, it
sure.
Go on for all kinds of about the magnetic field. But if you want to go down and look at the Cassini's pictures of a bright brightness in the rings, and.
Yeah, each one of those photographs you can click on, and it'll take you to the NASA webpage. And I cropped each one of those pictures to make these smaller pictures to illustrate the movement, what appears to me to be on the other side of the rings.
Yeah, looks like it probably is on the other side. If it is the sun itself being reflected on it, it would... It wouldn't move around so much, I think.
Well, and it also wouldn't. It just wouldn't appear this way if it was the sun reflection, because first Cassini is not sailing by Saturn, zooming past Saturn, and this appears to be the. If it was Cassini moving by Saturn, it would appear that Cassini is moving toward the center of Saturn and then would just zoom right away. But Cassini is in the orbit of Saturn right now.
Uh-huh.
And it wouldn't illustrate that it was actually flying, as I wrote, that it was not sailing through like a train sails through a station.
Right. There's also another thing I was noticing is that if it's an illuminated, that illuminated sphere shining, you know, its light through the ring, there would be diffusion caused by the ring. So the denser the ring, the more diffusion. So, of course, if you look at the ring which is more dense, it's whiter. One that is less dense, less filled with debris, it'll be darker.
Mm-hmm.
As a consequence to that, you'd probably have a sharper, smaller image of light, where this seems to follow as you look through the different images and you look at the dark band and you see a smaller area of light, whereas the darker, the whiter bands, which are more full of debris, actually diffuse the light to, you know, like a normal diffuser. Well, and you actually get a bigger area. So this looks more like the rings are acting as a diffuser of light energy from, you know, from the opposite side of where this is being photographed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's moving, so moving pretty rapidly.
And all these were taken the same day.
Yeah.
And sent to us the following day.
So that's one of the observations on this. So, of course, there's their explanation, and we can look at it in that term too. But as I said, I'm looking at it both directions, as a reflection and also as a illumination through the rings, and it seems to follow where the rings are less dense, filled with debris, less filled with debris, there is less diffusion. And then as you go, as it moves through areas, you can see that this seems to follow. Yeah.
Yes.
And if it was a reflection on areas which were would be the opposite effect, the areas which are more dense, having more reflectivity because of having more particles, would have a brighter, sharper image versus the other way around. Instead, it has a more diffused and broader image, and then the area where there is less density, you have a smaller image, which if it was reflection, you wouldn't have much at all because it couldn't reflect very strongly. Where it looks like the area which is dark band is very strong light coming through. So
mm-hmm.
That's just my my analysis. And by the way, that was my profession at one time. So anyway, let's go on from here.
Okay. And I have Cassini's instructed to snap a close-up image of this bright object.
Yeah, so we've got a collection of images on from NASA on the web page. You can click on this and we'll go right to that page, right?
Yes.
That amazed me when I first was doing this research with before I bought the book from you, Curtis.
Oh.
On what you had dug up here. And I've always used a balance of faith and science in my my Christianity, my Christian faith. I almost was sort of forced to think that way, you know. And as came down to it, this kind of thing really helps me understand how much we should try to understand these things, not just from one angle alone, but actually straddling our knowledge base as well as our faith base, and coming up with this answer. So right here we have our feelers out through Cassini and actually observing some of this stuff.
It's wonderful they're sending these pictures back.
Right.
But there's in this group there's 500 pictures in sending this images of their moon, Theos. And in this one image on page 20, and I must say that the images move around a little bit, so you may not see it on page 20 when you look at it, but it's on page 20 now, is this extremely bright object. But the two images before it are the ones, are the next one, next one's down. That's the...
Right. Those are the next ones. Before, you said they put the zoom lens, or they zoomed in on it.
Yeah, before they zoomed in on this object, they took these two pictures, or images. And it's almost like they were looking for this object out there, and when they found it, there it is. So they took this picture. It's a full resolution number 62208, and that one was a little corrupted, so they took another picture still on the same day, and you can see the star pattern is the same in the background to show that the camera didn't move.
Yeah. But in fact, the camera had basically the same position. And it may have actually took those in sequence, pretty close together.
Pretty close together.
One thing I did notice is that they're different in the sense that they show different things. If you look in the center, toward the center of it, is the object.
Very bright.
In the architectural world, New Jerusalem. Up in the upper left-hand corner of the first picture is an object. And if you zoom in on that, you'll notice that this is not a star. It is moving. It's moving, and I would say it'd be a vessel moving. you go to the second image down, which is probably taken pretty quickly, and again, this is for our this is set up pretty much for our revelation, for Earth's revelation. We need to know this, that we're not alone. As much as we want to, you know, discover it for ourselves, they're actually showing things to us. This is one of their demonstrations.
Because they knew Cassini was about to take the picture.
Right. They absolutely knew Cassini was there watching. They knew Cassini was taking a shot. And then in the second photo, you see a donut-shaped area of light. Now, I want to look at this because this is different, a never-before-seen possibility. I think it's a probability that it has broken the light barrier, very much how if we look at we were able to visualize, you know, just simply throw in a very, very calm pond of water, just simply throwing a stone in and seeing the propagation of waves that move out from that point of disturbance. And imagining that if you could see sound, it would look very much the same when a jet plane breaks the sound barrier, or much more recently, a jet car broke the sound barrier on Earth. I like that, but that's amazing to me. And you would have, a loud bang, and you would hear a little bit more rumble after that,
mm-hmm.
very much like you would have a wave of energy. With a peak and then following with lower amplitude waves. However, the second picture down does show that donut. And if you look around it, there is a bright donut. And then it sort of gets a little bit darker. And a little bit further out, it gets brighter again. The intensity increases. And then it tones down, becomes less brilliant, and then it becomes awash in this light pattern. So it looks like this vessel just zoomed across the screen, and we've got, because of Cassini, an actual vessel moving beyond light speed. Just in two shots. There it is. In the first shot, it's in the upper left-hand corner at about the 11 o'clock position.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see it gone. It's not there. In the second shot, but instead, we see this donut of energy, light energy. Very much like how the ripples out of on a pond, from a disturbed when a stone is thrown into it.
And because when we're seeing this image of what you refer to as a donut, something caused that. This just didn't happen.
Yes, because it's not apparent before, during it's apparent, and then during the zoom up, there would be traces of that in it, but it's kind of washed out by the brilliance of the object. And the third image is the actual zoom in on this object, which, by the way, is not a perfect sphere.
And the stars are in the same position, so
the
it really
stars are in the same position exactly. So
it really showed the cameras was still
right. Was looking at the same image, zoomed in on it, and then what else has happened here? And the bright image is that. There's two parts to it. There's an extremely brilliant area that is spherical. And then there is an area which doesn't seem as brilliant, that is more elliptical. And, of course, depending upon how much, you know, light radiates from it, we can have a different... We may not be able to see the actual outline of the architectural world, the sphere, following, you know, it might have just illuminated just the bottom portion of it, and And that is exactly how I remember seeing it when it was first pointed out to me, saying, this is where we're going there. And they showed it to me, and I said, oh, you mean that light bulb thing out there? And I said, yes, that's where we're going. And that was exactly how it looked.
And this architectural sphere, when they're also receiving the messages from the Earth that are sent to Cassini, and when they receive a message that says, Cassini, snap the next picture or move the telephoto lens in, and so they knew they were about to be photographed.
Yeah.
Can't put it past them.
It's like they're showing off. And, I mean, there's more than this where, you know, other UFOs have actually tried to show themselves. The Great Mexico flap of UFOs, that was a pretty amazing one, too, where they just, you know, here we are. Giving us, and now the most powerful thing I can imagine was when they let me remember the name as New Jerusalem, because that is extremely significant both to people who have a Bible following as well as those who are, you know, at least trying to understand that there may be a relationship of this sphere to another area, whether it be the Jerusalem on Earth or Urantia book calls on Jerusalem, which is almost the same, and it's easy to, you know, for me, I would have heard Jerusalem. They say Jerusalem, you know, I wouldn't hear Jerusalem, I would hear Jerusalem. Very, very difficult to discern the different sound, the spelling, while you could see a little different. But actually, yeah, both Jerusalem, I was told, and Jerusalem, New Jerusalem, named after the same place.
And,
so
and
that's
you,
a significant thing.
Yes, you told me that after we started these recordings, we started in the 24th of April.
Right.
But it was after that date?
After that date. I remember, see, this is an unfolding, for the benefit of everyone listening, this is an unfolding revelation. And individual who introduced me to the Urantia book, and his order of angelic order is that of a Dano, a very high angel, with a very important teaching role, the highest level of teacher. And this is the way that he is able to implant knowledge. I guess he even knew when it was going to be released to me. So this is an interesting thing, is that when I was remembering the seven psychic circles, I didn't remember much beyond that. And later, I remember that as clear as it just happened yesterday, I mean, just very, very clear, or even, you know, an hour ago, it was that clear. And I could remember the whole conversation, what went on, why the questions that came up, we've got a Jerusalem on Earth, all of these things. And it to me, is a revelation. They want us to know. They have been here in Jerusalem. In the Bible, is given a role as a celestial city of God, you know, that comes to Earth and lands on planet Earth. And from that point on, Earth is no longer alone. It is part of heaven. There's actually a new order, new heaven and a new Earth. And the old things are all gone. But that, according to the timetable, is about 1,000 years away. You know, so what is happening? Well, according to the Urantia book, what level of or event that is probably happening right now is the event of being revelatory event of being of learning a lot. And in this case, we are learning a lot more than even the Yurancha book could display. It's confirmed in the Yurancha book, as well as in the Bible, in a simple fact that the celestial city, and there were ways in which artists drew a city, just like uprooting any city and then making that come down out of heaven. And we know that this won't work. It would have to be some kind of a ship or sphere or some contained space, and that's exactly what I experienced, a very contained space that was in fact growing. Some of the interesting parallels we can run in with New Jerusalem as described in the Bible, as well as what I experienced there, if you want to take it that far, Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that he told me, as he said, look around here, and he was mentioning how everything was clean and new looking, and I said, yes, and how did you do that? And how does it, how does everything do that? Well, it was a point where, you know, when we are building a building or we are building anything, we go through everything mechanically. There's a mechanical step involved, even in our printed circuits, even in creating the silicon technology that we have. Still, although it grows to an extent, we're able to grow it. It doesn't grow in the way they said. The whole place is growing. They literally create by growing it. And I covered this before that. I said, oh, you mean like how a tree would grow? And it said, with its cells and, you know, and layer upon layer. And it said it's partially true, but it's not that way. Actually, there's no cells. They're actually smaller particles. And I began to ask them how these particles function. And they said it's not at the molecular level. It's a bit little bigger than that in terms of the actual particles that create it. But it's smaller than cells, someplace in between. And then one of the others was in that environment, which I call the classroom. Now I realize that when we were seated in this area, it was a classroom. And he simply said it's crystals. It's all crystals. And I immediately began to think of, you know, big quartz crystals, and, you know, just chunky, clunky crystals that we, you know, slice up and use and things like that, even to the point of, you know, being able to dope them and create CPUs out of them. But no, it says no. We grow crystals, and it's very small. And I began to realize that layer upon layer, they can actually create this crystal. Foundational crystal.
So are technology. Are you saying the entire sphere out there is made up of crystals?
Very purified crystal of all different elements, many, many. So what New Jerusalem in the Bible is shown as is having foundational levels of crystals.
Is that a coincidence?
I say it's more than a coincidence that the Apostle John was able to, you know, describe crystalline things there. And he described streets of gold clear as glass. Well, they say that when gold is purified to the point where it becomes crystal, it becomes clear as glass. So if you create a type of very purified gold, which is used, by the way, as a shield for the cockpit canopies of our jets, our fighters.
Oh, really?
Yes. So they're actually looking through gold.
Purified gold?
Yeah, very thin layer of gold on this. But anyway, this this concept of streets of gold is absolutely true. It just doesn't seem that way. When I went back to look at Rome, the ruins around there, and I looked at the ruins, and I just looked down to the ground, and I looked what we're walking on, as far as their streets were. Not only well-made cut stone roads, but they were rugged, and, you know, you obviously could tell they were cut stone. Mm-hmm. They were not anywhere near the precision beauty of, you know, a sheet of glass. And I think that he couldn't, you know, believe it. He was seeing the beauty of just the walkway, which was just, you know, beautiful. It was beautiful up in there. And, sometimes we achieve something pretty close to it, but what they did mention definitely was their technology was based on crystal. For some of their things that they don't build, they kind of grow it.
And is this why it looks so new, do you think?
Yes, because it renews itself. You know, somebody told me a few years ago we'll be using panes of crystal to look at. I'd be trying to imagine, you know, to look at our computer data on. You know, I've come from the days of, paper, green screens, and the ARPANET. That's the kind of stuff I was tinkering with. And, you know, hey, one day we'll be looking at crystal monitors, you know, flat screens of crystal, liquid crystal, Huawei.
Yes.
Technologies that we classify crystals can come in different forms. So, I'm thinking right now we're at that point where we can begin to accept that we're destined to become a part of a grand host of worlds, millions of worlds that populate our universe, our visible universe that we can actually look at. And we're being nurtured through to that point where we can become part of it. Just got to graduate from our short-term thinking to much longer-term thinking and realize that we're not alone. Very close to us are some people that are very interested into about us, and even had a lot to do with bringing life to Earth.
Well, they're not too far from Earth. They're just out near Saturn.
Yeah.
Which is far enough away where we really need a pretty sophisticated telescope to see them. But instead of all this radio telescopes looking for aliens, they can literally see
that,
it.
You know, when we looked at those photographs, and I was pointing out, this perhaps could be a ship breaking the light barrier. Well, if they were using and basically technology they could hand over to us, which would break the light barrier, why would we use, you know, basically smoke signals when we got a cellular in our hand?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're always looking for smoke signals when it's really radio waves. Well, we're looking for radio waves as if, you know, when they're not using radio waves.
And so they have a radio.
Yeah, radio waves are obviously, you know, very energetic part of the universe. And, you know, they're easily detectable and measured and modulated. And, you know, that's part of my expertise. But why would you use something that travels at the velocity of light when you could go many times faster than light? Actually, we're discovering it now, and we haven't figured out how we could use quantum entanglement, you might say, or quantum teleportation right now for communication, but it does say that it's possible. You know, we're at the level just before Tesla was able to demonstrate the propagation of electromagnetic waves. We knew that sparks, hey, you got sparks, you know. Mm-hmm. Not much more than that. When it comes down to quantum teleportation and quantum entanglement, which is faster than light.
Well, we just see this, we can see this object with just a big, huge lens. We don't need radio waves or any sophisticated electronics.
Right, and that's a part of where we have to use another part of who we are, not just our brain, our ability to perceive with our five senses. We have to use our faith, which is actually built in, that part, which functions in the dynamics of God, which is using quantum entanglement to communicate with us, right? Within our very being, right in our body, to verify inside of us, in our hearts, that this is for real. This is marking a beginning or a very close point in time where things will start changing really rapidly for us.
Well,
talking about Earth here, on Earth.
Well, this object out there, this architecture world, they could see Cassini coming. And they knew we were building her and launching it.
Right.
And they were all set for it, but Saturn is so huge, Cassini had to know where to look to see this object.
You pointed that out to me, is that there must have been curiosity going on. But curiosity at a point where no one wants to really declare the curiosity on something esoteric. They just want to get funded and make sure to get the funding so they can go discover life on one of the moons or look at the moon's function and all this unexplained stuff. But there may be something that was very interesting that they wanted to look at, which is bright object apparently was actually spotted from Earth, and as well as the unusual things going on, like the hexagon, I believe, on Saturn that was visible for a long time.
Yeah, that huge hexagon
kinds of thing.
On the top of Saturn.
Yeah, yeah.
With those equal length straight lines and equal angles.
Right.
Just like a big, huge stop sign.
That's probably one of the neatest things to say about it. Stop at Saturn and take a look.
Stop at Saturn. Well, at least they, I mean.
Yeah.
Would the public take notice if it spelled out the word stop, or would they have just thought it was just a silly little thing?
Of course, they probably, you know, would have flipped out if they saw that. But then they would have said, oh, no, that's just a guy with a plank down there on the top of Saturn, just, you know, giving us a message. Yeah.
Well, that hexagon is also so much larger than several Earths.
Right, exactly. So, of course, we know that a guy with a plank couldn't do it. First of all, he couldn't even get there. But the idea is there's a lot of messages that are being sent our way. And some of them form crop circles, and some of them form, you know, encounters. We watch vehicles that come into our sight. Mm-hmm. We can take pictures of some. And there's also fakes and frauds and charlatans out there. And that's my, you know, I don't want to waste this story on, you know, and I'm sure they didn't want to waste educating me out there at New Jerusalem, because there's a whole academy out there, you know, with these many students, you know, that are running around there, taking in the lessons of planet Earth, having its own way, and trying to find its way through the hardship of coming into this stage of light and life, which we hope for, but which inevitably will come, because they're parked right out there, and they're watching, and they're waiting.
They're waiting for us to arrive, waiting for us to see them.
Yeah.
Waiting for us to have technology strong enough to be able to get closer to see them.
Yes. One of the things that will be interesting is many of them are higher than our mortal beings, but they're very visible. I mean, I could describe them, right? Riley could describe them. Others have described other beings. And, to show themselves and walk around with us would be a big mistake they didn't make themselves known clearly. And then with that, they could try to help us. And I'm not saying they'd never tried. In fact, I'm saying that there were attempts made in the past to try to help and elevate our society philosophically in a religious sense, too. You look at even that carving that I've, that piece of sculpture that I've found in the Stone Age picture of what I call the Elephant Men.
Yes.
Because they're tall heads and stuff. But apparently they're tall heads and ears, they're big ears and ear lobes. They were fully functional here on Earth at one time. There are a lot of them. And I think what happened was they were taken off. They decided not to hang around, but wait until we get to the right point.
These images, the two images above the very bright close-up image.
Mm-hmm.
What's causing all the illumination on the right-hand side of the image? On both images, it's darker on the left side, much brighter on the white on the right side.
Mm-hmm. There's apparently a directivity in the light effect, the energy, energetics of light on that side. Because, of course, you know, you photograph light. And it would mean that it is following from there, that kind of, you know, the concept where the energy, you know, with distance diminishes. So there's a source to the right. Don't know what that source is, but there is a source to the right. Could be, I wouldn't say it was the sun because of the way it diminishes. It just diminishes too quickly.
Well, if you look at the photograph below the bright object, the one that was taken on the 22nd of May.
Right. There's nothing there.
And that's the neighborhood around Saturn, dark, only illuminated by the sun.
Yeah. It may actually be, you know, a ship just escorting Cassini along. This is my supposition, you know, I'm just making this up as I go along, but it could be that, you know, that there's another light source that could be a ship. Cassini is not being able to photograph because it's saying, hey, we're looking at Cassini right now, it's going to take a picture here, click. But it's interesting, though, that you notice that, because that is, that does mean that there's a source of illumination somewhere else. To the right.
It is so bright out there. When you look at the full resolution image, the one that's with that donut, or the one above it, labeled 1935, and you just look at that object, that object is round and big and bright, and
right.
you can tell it's a digital camera they're taking it with, or it's because of the star pattern or the shining pattern at the north and south poles and east and west. But you don't get that when you look at the moon.
Oh, no.
Theos, that's just lit up by the sun.
Yeah, there he would have, looks like it's able to, you know, quickly able to adjust to the illuminated intensity of that moon. However, this object is throwing it off. But it does show that the stars that are invisible in the background means that it's not a whole lot brighter than those stars.
You mean the moon?
Because if it was a whole lot brighter than the stars, you couldn't see the stars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Be a wash in light.
Oh, you mean the bright object?
Yeah. Whereas the moon apparently is pretty bright. There's no stars in the background. But it's easily focused on.
Yeah, the stars.
That's another thing that I was immediately when I saw this object, I said it's a moon. We're going to this moon over there, and just told me it's not a moon. And as we approached it, I began to, you know, fear colliding with it. But as we came closer, that's pretty far away. You know, this the one with the big picture of the object.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's pretty far. You can see that. You can see the entire thing. But when you approach close enough, it becomes just like you're gonna, you know, you're seeing an extremely large place where it just simply fills everything you see, you know, whatever was available to visualize it. It was just all architectural sphere. So as we approached, I continuously looked for any kind of texture, especially craters, especially things that would look natural, such as, you know, impact type of thing. And that would tell me this is a moon, but it didn't have that at all. It was just smooth, exactly like how the picture shows, very smooth. And we penetrated right in through that light and came in for a landing.
What do you think those dark areas are on this architectural world?
Well, this is an area which is not illuminated, definitely. If you were to look at it in another point of perspective, instead of saying that, you know, you look at that crescent-shaped dark thing, it looked like a very, very large disc is coming out of it or going into it.
Could it be the openings where the discs...
It could be.
...go in and out of it?
It could be. I don't know, but you know, you could imagine it being like a disc is penetrating the sphere from the outside. You know, that dark, mm-hmm. the dark disc-shaped object is penetrating the sphere.
It almost looks like
ever,
it's.
I don't know if what it is.
You can see two of them: one on the left, and then one. It looks like around the circumference.
Right. There's a possibility of that, but it, like you say, it could be just the actual opening, which is available for somebody's landing or something, covered by a sphere. I don't know. It just seemed like it just went right through this light and right through the surface.
When you entered the
there
object.
Definitely was a difference. Bright and white, and then we went in, it became darker immediately. You knew you penetrated. It wasn't like entering atmosphere. Not at all.
No, you were definitely inside the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Something inside the vessel.
Immediately changed back, you know. We're not. So this kind of stuff is interesting. The timing is very interesting. For myself as a born-again Christian, I look at this and knowing it's New Jerusalem, I'm amazed that, you know, it was held back from me all these years. And only now comes out when we have all of these discoveries.
And again, you're saying they told you it was New Jerusalem after we started these recordings.
Yes, yes.
And it seemed
so
like
I didn't know we were
going to
end
ago.
Up. I didn't know. That wasn't my hidden agenda there. There was no agenda except to remember that I needed to just be honest about it and just say, you know, there's really something that Riley Martin has, and he really did see a lot of that stuff. But that's part of the school. You know, a lot of the stuff that he experienced is part of the schooling that you go through over there. It really is schooling. You know, first thing we got to learn is we're not alone. You know, there's all kinds of beings, even ones that don't even resemble a living creature.
Well, we have a lot of those creatures on Earth.
Yeah, but there's one that I'll never forget, which was on the I was walking with Dano, and I stopped and I said, "Oh, you got plants here." But this, when I looked at it, it was crystal based and it moved. In response to my curiosity, my attention, I gave it. It moved, and it seemed to be intelligent, but it was. I'm fine as Christmas trees, and you know, if you were to decorate a plant with all the jewelry of a jewelry store, it wouldn't even come close to the beauty that I saw in this, because the plant or this creature emanated a light that, you know, had all different hues, and it had leaves that were just beautiful, but you could see through them, and it was beyond Earth. But it was so beautiful. Hmm. There are other things that go on that, just, you know, that we haven't really found any parallel on Earth. But they're there, that's for sure.
Well, it's really beautiful that all this is happening, and it seems to be coming together rather quickly.
Yeah, it does point out something might be happening that's going to break open more knowledge, more. What is the esoteric will become the norm.
Well, next, our next recording will start at noon Honolulu time, and that'll be 6 p.m. East Coast time, and I'll change the times on the website. And this is remarkable, and the website's still growing. I'm still going to be adding some more images to the NASA Connection HTML page. And I guess people have noticed there's four connections here: the object near Saturn, and which is the NASA connection, and the Urantia book, which is the Urantia connection, and then there's Riley, and now there's Michael. So it's coming together quickly, and I'm glad we're able to do this. And it seemed like our audio was pretty good tonight. Sorry we didn't have any callers, but maybe next time someone will call in. So, Michael, thanks again. It was good to talk about the website a little bit as far as these images that Cassini's sending back. Thank you, NASA and JPL, and everyone else involved. Lockheed Martin built the Cassini spacecraft. So we'll talk to you next time, Michael.
Okay.
Okay, see you.
Okay, bye.
Aloha, bye.
Aloha.